Welcome back, everybody, to The Arrow. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And Tony, we have a banger of an episode to talk about today, but I almost like lost my headphones on that. We have a banger of an episode to talk about today.
Too much of a banger. Bring it back. Bring
it
back
a little bit. I know. But before we get started, we actually have like a packed intro full of announcements. So,
yes, we do.
Let's get through them. First and foremost, we just moved our podcast, as you all probably heard at the beginning of the show. We just moved our podcast over to Anchor. Anchor is our new hosting service, so we're no longer on Audio Boom. We're on Anchor. We should be coming all the way to all of the sites that we were on. We're already on Spotify. We're already on Apple. We're already on Google. Some of those other like more fringe ones that some of you might listen to, we should be back there. If you're not getting the new episodes there immediately, I'll tweet about this too, but if you're not getting those new episodes immediately, give it a week. Let us know if you have any issues with not being able to access old episodes or anything like that, so I can sort it out. But we're on a new platform. We also have an advertisement at the front that you all probably heard. It was like, what is happening right now? So we're on Anchor now. That is announcement number one.
Yes. Announcement number two. So it's been just over a month now that we did the book giveaway, and I remember, and the podcast right after that, I mentioned that we were going to be doing some more giveaways. So it took a little bit longer than expected, but we're finally doing another giveaway.
Let's go.
So it should be this week that I will be posting about a giveaway. Hopefully it's on August 27th. If it's not, it might be the next day. Just keep a lookout for it. But it's going to be a sticker pack giveaway. So we're doing a small collab with Wallflower Studios, which they make some amazing stickers. Like I personally bought some stickers, the Animal Crossing ones, and I love the quality. I love the personal touches that she does with her notes. And I kind of just wanted to shout her out and kind of be able to collab with her in some way. And once I found out that she had Avatar stickers, I was like, oh, heck yeah, let's do something. So giveaway, and I mean, just follow the rules in the description to participate.
Yeah, so free stuff, man. Like,
who literally, doesn't want free stuff?
Literally just go on your phone and enter, and that's it. Like, it's super easy. Those stickers are super dope, so make sure you get that. Last announcement. Very non-Arrow related, but it's me related. Remember when I said I was going to have a show up by June for like a New Year's resolution? Well, coronavirus happened and that wasn't a thing. But yeah, it's a thing now because I decided, well, forget about in person. I'm not going to do that forever now. So my new show is coming out this Friday. On the 28th of August. It's called Yo, Let Me Tell You. It's already up on Spotify at the time of you guys listening to this. There's a trailer up for you guys to all go and listen to. Not you guys, you all. You're not all guys. For you all to go listen to. It's just a show where you talk, where people come on and talk about things that they're passionate about, their hobbies, weird internet holes that they fell down like way farther down than they expected to, conspiracy theories, whatever. And, you know, Tony's already recorded an episode with me for that show.
Yes, I have.
So that one's not going to be up immediately, but if you're looking forward to me and Tony talking about something not quite Avatar related, if you're really into like some of our bonus content normally, you'll really like that episode. So I'd really appreciate it if you all dropped a follow on the Spotify or just went to anchor.fm/yo let me tell you and found like the subscription links for that, because I think it's going to be a really good show. So I'd really appreciate the support.
Nice.
Awesome.
All right. Is that it?
Yeah, dude. We are only minutes in, and I said we need to get done before 5 minutes. So.
All right. Nice. We're ahead of schedule. Okay, cool.
We're ahead
cool.
of schedule. We're ready to talk about this banger of an episode.
Oh,
let's
man.
Go.
All right. So this week, we're talking about Enter the Void.
Dude, this... I haven't rewatched all of season four yet. I've only watched some of season four yet. Mm-hmm. But what I thought was my favorite episode from season four has already passed by the time of us recording this episode, because I've just been kind of watching ahead because Charisse got really into it. This is my favorite episode of Korra.
Really?
This is it. The other contender was close. It was really good, but it wasn't this episode, man. It wasn't. So let's get going.
So where'd we leave off? Okay, so we have to save the airbenders.
Mm-hmm.
So last episode we found out that Zahir was already at the Northern Air Temple with Tenzin. There was this whole epic fight, super dramatic, super sad. So essentially everybody else had to make their way there by airship. So we see that there's a Su, Ling, Korra, the Team Avatar, Korra's father, and then a handful of metalbenders that they're kind of taking as their battalion to be able to go stop Zahir. And they're kind of trying to plan it out, but they can't really agree on what to do or what's the best strategy, because it just really seems that, I mean, the Red Lotus is pretty stacked. Like,
no, 100%.
Yeah, like, you know, you would come from the sky, try to attack, you would get splashed out by combustion bending. Try to scale the mountainside. If we get caught, lava bending will, you know, just flood the cliffside.
Right.
So it really just seems like a very difficult situation for them to kind of get around, not just giving up Korra.
Yeah, and so as Korra's listening to them plan and everything like that, she eventually just says, like, yo, like, I have to turn myself in. I just have to give them what they want. And then they're like, no, we'll never let you do that. And she's like, if we want there to be airbenders in this world still, that's what I need to do. Like, I have to do it to keep everybody safe.
Exactly. She kind of just came to this determination last episode when she talked to Old Man Zuko, and understood that, like, this is something that, like Aang would give his life for, is to bring back the Air Nation from the brink of extinction. Like, that it was his, I mean, above everything else, it really just seemed like that was his life purpose, with his children, with bestowing Tenzin all of his knowledge. And for her, it's just like the world has been out of balance for so long that she can't risk this. So in her mind, it's just like, it's better me than all of them.
Yeah. And so, you know, one thing that I was wondering during this episode, and I kind of came to a conclusion of it for myself, was when Korra, like, it sounded like Korra had, like, with that conversation with Zuko, she had this kind of, maybe a little bit of this comparison of herself to Aang, but I also don't think it was that. I think that there was probably some part of her who was already like, do I just need to, like, give myself up and just, like, face this head on? Like, and this is something that's so different, because Korra has continuously wanted to face her problems head on, right? Yeah. And I think that she had matured to a point in this season where, you know, she doesn't necessarily feel the need to take her problems head on. She doesn't need to be out in the middle of the conflict all the time. And then it's like, oh, wait, actually, I think that's what I need to do this time. And and it took Zuko saying, you know, Aang would have done this. And it was almost like it's outside of his nature to have done something like this, but he would have, for the sake of the Air Nation. And so she was like, you know what, definitely, this is the right answer.
Yeah, it's very difficult when you're in a position of growth. Mm-hmm. When you understand that, like Korra, she was a little bit more naive growing up. And even in the very beginning of this series, we see that she doesn't really think things out as well as she should. Mm-hmm. So she's in a position of growth, and she has come to this point where we see her very confident in her decisions and actually being able to plan things out and really see consequences for her actions. And like you mentioned, it's just like, it's almost reverting back to maybe the right decision here is to do what I would have done prior.
Yeah.
It conflicts with your current mentality, with what you're kind of trying to convince yourself of, like,
right.
What I used to think wasn't right.
Yeah. Well, it's something that I tell my clients all the time. It's this metaphor that I use. It's like, we all think that we have these things, like, we're doing things wrong all the time. And what I say is, like, you know, like, if you're really, really good at swinging a sledgehammer, that's such a great skill if you're a blacksmith, right? Like, blacksmith being able to swing a hammer really well, really powerfully, really swiftly, such a great skill. But then you put that person on a playground with children, and that's their only skill. Now it doesn't seem like it works, right? Like, there's no skill that's actually wrong. You're never doing something that's, like, wrong. You're just using something that doesn't fit in the place where you're at right now. And so Korra had these instincts, had these intuitions that would have really helped her out in a situation like this, that when she was put into some new situations, she was tested and she was you know, pushed away and everything like that. And that conditioned her to think like, okay, maybe the way that I do things is wrong. And that wasn't, that wasn't true, as evidenced by her needing to put herself in the middle of the conflict right now. Right.
Yeah.
So I really liked that decision-making process. A lot of times we like to focus on different characters kind of, storylines and go from one storyline and then go through the other storyline. But I think that these storylines are so kind of intertwined.
Yeah.
That I feel like we should just talk, go straight to Zaheer in the sanctuary.
Zaheer in the sanctuary?
Yeah, because I think that happens kind of simultaneously at this moment because...
I mean, they still radio him and they still talk about the next plan.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, at that point, Cora ends up talking to Zaheer and letting him know that like I'm going to give myself up, but you have to let the airbenders go, which is like, why am I just gonna give them up? Like, that's all I have. So they end up deciding to meet at the peak of Lahima's peak at noon to be able to give them up. And that's when Sue comes up with the plan that okay, like, our metal benders, they don't know how many people essentially we've brought. So what we can do is we have our metal benders and
scale the side Tanrock, of the mountain.
Yeah, scale the side of the mountain and wait for the opportunity to take out Zaheer as Bolin, Mako, and Asami go and rescue the air nomad. I mean, the airbenders, yes.
Right. Yeah, also, I will skip ahead for 1 second here because Tanrock scaling up a mountain... I mean, like, it wasn't the best piece of animation that the show has ever given us. he looks like the Hulk a little bit, you know, like kind of just like, I don't know. It's funny. But in the sanctuary with Zaheer, so we see Zaheer kind of chanting. He says, release your earthly tether, enter and become wind, enter the void, something like that, right? If not something like that, exactly that. So, and so it's interesting because he really focuses on like that release your earthly tether. At that moment in time, Pali walks into the room.
Yeah.
And Pali and Zaheer have this really tender moment actually, in which she talks about how he rescued her from a warlord when she was younger, and how that warlord would have made her his slave, in that she's known true freedom because of him. And they talk about their love for one another. And
well, yeah, Zaheer mentions, like, there wasn't a single day that went by that I didn't think about you.
Yeah, and I think, and I mean, if this is my first time watching through, I wouldn't have really caught that, but like, Pali is the earthly tether, right?
Exactly.
Like, and then they kiss, and then you're like, damn, Pali is so tall. She is so tall. she's like a good like 8-9 inches tall.
Or maybe Zaheer is short.
Is Zaheer short? He doesn't. I don't know. Like, he looks like,
I really don't know people's heights. Because I mean, it turns out that Zuko was what, 5'2"?
What?
Yeah.
No.
Yes. At how old was he at the end of the series? 16. He was 5'2".
No.
Yes. Go look it up,
dude. Can I look it up right now?
Yeah, go look it up.
Okay. Let me look it up right now. I don't believe you.
Everybody else, go look it up. See if you can find it faster.
How tall is Zuko? Zuko is approximately... Wait. Hold on. Short Jean from Iroh... official height chart. Okay, I found an official height chart.
Official height chart.
Well, it's official, but it's on DeviantArt, so
official to that artist.
Okay. It says, yeah, Zuko is like, this one makes Zuko look like 5'4", and makes Aang look 4'9".
Huh. Okay.
And Azula is slightly shorter than Iroh. I don't think Zuko is 5'2", dude.
I saw a different one and it said that the same thing. It was like a scaling and it showed him as 5'2".
Oh, 5 feet and a half is this person saying on the actual Avatar fandom.wiki. It says that Aang was 4'6", Zuko is 5 feet and 1/2 inch, Roku was 5'6". dude, Roku looked like he was like 6'2". Yeah. I'm just going to scale them all up. So Zaheer is like 5'5", and Pali is like 6'3". Like,
yeah, possibly.
She's like real tall.
She's like my height.
Really tall. Yeah. I don't know. It just made such an impression on me that I wrote in my book, Pali is so tall.
Pali, so tall.
But so as Cora prepares for her mission, she shares some tender words with her dad. Her dad tells her how proud he is of her. And then he hulks up the mountain with the metal benders and everything like that. And Cora kind of just flies up to the peak with her radio. Bolin and Mako and Asami are supposed to meet Gazan to free the airbenders.
Yeah, and they see the temple completely destroyed. Yeah. They're flying right overhead, and they can see the previous battle with Tenzin in the Red Lotus, and how devastating of a battle it was, because like half of it's blown to pieces.
Yeah, yeah, and so what ends up happening is that Korra is on the radio with Mako and Asami and them, while Zaheer is on the radio with Gazan. And so Korra's like, you first. And then Zaheer is like, you first. And then eventually Zaheer says, I don't have time for you. And he's like, just execute them. Just kill them right now until Korra gives herself up. He basically kind of like strong arms her into giving herself up. At which point Korra does. She drops the radio. She drops her staff. She walks over to Zaheer,
at that moment, Mako and everybody else is walking up to Tenzin. They're trying to see if he's okay. He's mumbling something, but they can't really understand him until they take the gag off, and then they realize that all those
airbenders
in the shadows weren't actually airbenders.
It's just Pali. Oh, not Pali. Minghua.
Minghua.
Oh,
my gosh. Dude, that's some crazy stuff that she's able to manipulate it to her water to look like, you know, a dozen or so people.
But it was also a scene that was just straight out of horror, dude. Like, yeah. It's like, that's what I said in our previous coverage of Avatar The Last Airbender. They just are really good at, like, covering genre points, like, really, really well, because I think that was a more effective horror reveal than horror movies that I've watched in real life that like some people seem to really like that was just like, it was like scary. I was like, oh shoot, like dude, they're gonna get messed up right now.
Yeah.
And so then Mako quickly screams like, it's a trap, the airbenders aren't here. And then Korra, who's already like tied up,
luckily she was able to hear it through the radio.
Yeah she's already tied up, and then she just firebends herself away, like just jumps and like firebends from her feet and just like gets away, and then the big battle ensues.
Yes. So that's when that was the kind of Mako gives a signal to the meadowbenders to go and help Korra. They swing up and it just goes in full battle mode with the meadowbenders going after Pali as she's trying to stop them. And then we see Tarnrok go after Korra. So it was a very interesting move that he did, because like, he swung up, he lashed at Zaheer, and Korra almost falls off the edge. He grabs her, freezes the chains, and instead of like, oh, let me save you, let me help you up, he just straight throws his her. Daughter straight at Zaheer.
Yeah, and at that moment, I was like, okay, wait. Father and daughter are going to give the Bending Brothers a run for their money in terms of like best duos of fighters. I was like, oh shoot, hold on a second. They're like, I mean, that's just like a coordination of people who don't need to. I mean, let's be honest, like who taught her how to fight, right? A lot of people taught her how to fight, but I don't doubt that she didn't spend like a lot of time in her early years of life, like sparring with Tanrock.
Yeah, of course.
As she's taking like waterbending lessons from Katara. Of course she would like spar with her dad, I'm sure.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we see like how aggressive Chunrock's bending is. I mean, you've mentioned it before, and we've talked about it, that like his bending style is really like earth bending. And in this environment, he doesn't have like a an abundance of water to be able to do those moves that we normally see him do, but it still doesn't stop him from being like extremely aggressive with his movements.
Oh yeah, I mean, even in this moment, like, we see him using primarily just ice. He's throwing punches. He gets really close to Zaheer with like the spiky ice hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh. The ice and spear. He tries to just it. Take he was yeah, he was ready he to was take ready. Him out, dude. And Zaheer barely escapes and just he smashes his hand on the ground, yeah. shattering the ice. It's just like
But then again that's like his over aggressive bending style is like hit first, ask questions later, which, you know, It is a good tactic to overwhelm an opponent, but as we see here with Tonrock, is like he went for that kill shot, but he had no extra reserved water, no backup if he missed. So once he missed, he had no defenses and was able to just get thrown off by Zaheer off the cliffside with his airbending.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's that's just kind of how it goes in terms of like the strategy of fighting, though, right? Like, you can go for that like final move, and you put your energy into that, but if that's it and you miss, I think he was willing to take that gamble, because I think that Tonrock had enough trust in everybody else who was there fighting that he would be saved, that even if he went down that they would finish the mission. So I think that he saw himself as like making a worthwhile trade. What I would call in Splatoon a worthwhile trade. So we see the metal benders, we see Tonrock and Korra and everybody fighting, and then we see a conversation with Su Yin and Lin, right?
Yeah.
Su Yin and Lin are kind of trying to get an angle on going after Zaheer, but they're just
pinned down
Lin mentions that, like, with the combustion bender, they're never gonna make it through.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lin's like, "You draw her fire, I'm gonna get an angle on her." And gosh, this is like the craziest thing ever. Dude. I can't. So Lin completely like just puts herself in harm's way, trying to kind of get Puli to focus on her, while Su Yin kind of goes to the side, flanks. And then once she sees Puli like inhaling
she had no choice, because I mean Lin went out there and she was holding her own fairly well, but once she had that like rock wall up, she got taken out and almost thrown off the cliff. So I mean Puli was getting ready for that kill shot as well.
Yeah.
So it's just like at that moment it's like, what, like it's a split second decision of like, what do I do right now? And if I don't make the right decision, my sister's going to die.
Yeah, and I just remember, dude, this moment, it hit me the same way again when I rewatched the episode.
But yeah.
This moment where Puli takes a breath in, and in that split second, Su Yin bends the metal off of her body, bends off her armor.
Yeah.
Throws it exactly at Puli's head as Puli's about to lunge her head forward, encloses her head in the metal. And all we see is a flash and then Zaheer's face in complete and utter just
distress.
Distress. He's completely destroyed. And he says, and like the pain in the voice, Puli.
Yeah.
And then you just like, oh my gosh. It's like the craziest moment in Avatar history ever. Hands down. The craziest moment ever. Because you see the spot where Puli was standing. It's kind of like Looney Tunes charred smoke going up.
Yeah.
Like, she just blew herself up.
Yeah, she's decapitated herself.
Yeah, yeah. No body or anything like that left, too. Like, it was just, oh my god, it was so insane. And at this point,
Zaheer takes out Korra, so he's like, "I'm done playing games. I am completely done." He airbends his way over, you know, gets that altitude and does like a full double kick into Korra and just like smashes her down into the floor, and she passes out. And he goes to the cliff edge and he's kind of cornered by Lin and Su that are finally able to make their way over.
You have no escape. There's nothing you can do. We're going to throw you in that prison again. And all he says is, Enter and become wind.
Let go your earthly tethers. Enter the void. Empty and become wind.
Yeah. And then he just falls off of the back of the cliffside. Uh-huh. And then they're like, what? They run to the edge of the cliff. And you just see his toe above a cloud with a small shadow. And he is just levitating.
So he's discovered flight.
Yes. He's literally, and it's not gliding. He's not like air spouting or anything. He's literally just unaided. He's just flying.
Yes. Unassisted flight.
Yeah. And so he just flies away, and then and they're just like dumbfounded. So that's what happened on that battlefield. Over underground where the fake airbenders were, Mako Bolin and Tenzin and Asami they've cornered Gazan. What happened to Minghua? I don't remember what happened to her.
She immediately left. They didn't corner Gun. They didn't corner anyone. What are you talking about?
Yeah, they were fighting against Gazan, and they cornered him, and then he said, I'm never going back to prison. You're right.
Yeah, you're right. You're a completely
different episode. Yeah, he just escapes.
Because Minghua does the flip overhead. Mm-hmm. They're at the exit point of this room, so the only exit that they have, and Minghua is like just flood. She said something. I forget what she said.
Oh, she said just throw them off the side of the mountain or something like that.
No. Flood she said, it with not lava. Flood or... them. She said just bury them. Bury them. She said, just bury them. Mm-hmm. So then he just like conjures up a bunch of lava, completely takes over the floor, and then they take off. Mm-hmm. So at this point, they're just, they have their back against the wall, and Bolin's able to you know, slow the rate of the lava, but not completely. Mm-hmm. So that's when Tenzin's like, oh, I think I know another way out of here.
Mm-hmm. And so he tells Bolin where to kind of like bend. And so they end up on the side, like the cliff of a, they end up on the cliff side of a, what's it called? Of the temple. Mm-hmm. And at that very last minute, Bolin, like there's, the lava is coming and they have nowhere to go. And then, Bolin's like, you guys stand back. And then he walks towards the lava, just like, I've got no other choices. Like, I've got to try this.
That's the thing. This scene is...
It's culmination of, like, the best kind of development that they've ever given Bolin.
It's so powerful in the fact that they're at the end. They have no other option. And you see in Bolin's face, it's not a face of, you know, confidence or heroism or any of that. Which you know, we see a lot of these times when people are in the state of conflict of life or death situations in animations or anything. It was really just again a face of complete despair and distraught, where it's just like, I don't know what I could do. Mm-hmm. As he's literally staring down lava, but he's like, you see it in his actions. It's like, if I don't do something, then we're all going to die. Mm-hmm. So even when he does his immediate approach to the lava, it again, he has his eyes completely closed once he puts his hands up. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, again, out of confidence or any knowledge that, you know, I can do something. It's just a hope and a prayer that I hope something happens.
Yeah. And so he just throws his arms forward and kind of starts screaming, and the lava goes over him, and then it kind of starts retreating back, and then it starts solidifying. And then everybody's like, Bolin, you're a lava bender. And he's like, I know, I just found out. No, but I think all jokes aside, this is the kind of development, and this is the kind of treatment that I wish Bolin got throughout the entire series, just because, like, there was so much focus on, can Bolin metal bend, or is Bolin ever gonna, it wasn't a question of if Bolin can metal bend. It was kind of like presented as, when is he gonna do it? Like, when is it gonna happen? And I remember the first time that I saw Gazan and Bolin meet, when I was watching the show, I was like, I think Bolin's gonna lava bend. And I was talking to my friends about it. They're like, no, he's gonna metal bend. And I'm like, no. I think he's getting a lava bend. These are, just for the record, different than the friends that I was talking to in elementary school after I watched the first episode of Avatar and said, I think that that prince guy is going to be his firebending teacher. Like, no, he's the bad guy. I'm like, I just got a knack for these things, I guess. But it, like, it's because Bolin not only has to go through so much of, like, the pain of, like my brother is always better than me at stuff. Like I've always wanted to metal bend, and then my friend who like is an earthbender but is like not really an earthbender but like is an earthbender, like can metal bend but I can't, picks it up extremely fast, only 1 in 100 people can do it, like essentially like everything that I've ever thought about wanting to do has been done by somebody else, and I've always been left with the leftovers. And so or even to the point where Mako was like, this is your moment. This is your make it or break it moment. If you don't metal bend right now, like, we're done for. And it wasn't him. It was actually Zaheer that let them out. So Bolin's just gone through loss after loss after loss, only to discover that he had a power that was, for all intents and purposes, a little bit rarer. It at least from the evidence that we have.
I mean, we've only seen two.
right? So, like, a skill that's, like, rarer, a little bit more destructive, it feels like. Yeah. But that was also, like, life-saving and makes him completely unique and individual, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I really liked that moment of Bolin being able to discover his lava bending. And it's a really great moment.
Mm-hmm. And then we get to see Kai. So Kai is alive. We saw that before. And yeah, he comes to save the day with his baby bison.
Yes.
So Lefty. they're all able to stack on top of a Lefty, and able to get out of there. But as they're kind of flying away, they pan over to the Northern Temple, and it's completely destroyed. Mm-hmm. Like, before it was already destroyed.
Yeah.
But at this point, it's like there's nothing.
Because this was the temple left that the mechanists stayed at, correct?
No, that was the Eastern Temple, I believe. No, from my understanding. It looks completely different from the outside, at least.
The mechanists stayed at the Northern Temple because that was the episode just before they got to the North Pole.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I believe so. Sure. We can look it up, but I think it was the Northern Temple.
You're probably right, but I always thought it was the Eastern Temple.
The Eastern Temple was... Okay, so the Southern Temple is where Aang is.
Oh, wait,
from.
No. Yes, he's from the South. The Western Temple is the one that's, like, upside down.
The Eastern Temple is where we met Guru Patik.
Oh, probably.
Yeah, because we visited all four temples throughout the series. The last one we visited was the Western Air Temple. The second one we visited was the Northern Air Temple. The third we visited was the Eastern, and so the first was the Southern.
It just looked completely different to me, so I didn't think it was the same.
Well, maybe Aang came back and was like, all right, guys, like, we gotta clean this up. But yeah, so the temple is just completely falling off of the side of the mountain, completely just destroyed beyond
once
all
that lava. Yeah, once that lava flow stops, there's not going to be anything left over, which is it's sad, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, this again, I mean, we're just coming back from the Air Nation coming from, like, the brink of extinction, mm-hmm. and they finally have, like, this population that they're able to uprise and train, and now they're losing a piece of history.
Yeah, they've lost a piece of history. And to be fair, I think that, I'm sorry, I'm like burping for some reason. I'm like, ah. But to be fair, I think that it's also a little bit symbolistic too. Like, these new airbenders came back, and the Air Nation, it is not and cannot look the same way that it did hundreds of years ago, mm-hmm. right? That this temple doesn't reflect what this group of people is going to be, especially because of the tragedies that these people have gone through prior to this, and the historical tragedy and the immediate tragedy, I think, is going to have to reform the Air Nation into being something completely different, maybe not completely different, but something that is quite a bit different than what we would have imagined Air Nomads to look like 180 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, so Kai saves everybody, and he's like, guys, I know where they're taking Korra, listen to me.
Wait. Before that, we get a huge reveal.
Oh, yeah, we know.
So you get Tanrock. He's like, you know what? Hey, thank you. I owe you my life to this Meadowbender that saved him from falling over the cliff.
Yes.
And she's like, you can call me Kuvira.
Zelda Williams, you are now known as Kuvira. So Kuvira's name is finally dropped.
Yes. And so this is the character that I've been talking about since the Metal Clan,
yeah.
Where she's like been in the newspaper. She was in the Dancing with Sue. She was the one that reported to them when Ming Wei.
Ai Wei.
There you go. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
When he was trying to escape, like she's been, you know, like here and there all the time. And again, Sue decided to bring her very specifically to this battle, and we finally get her name.
Yeah, she's a. I would go as far to say that she is so far, showing herself to be one of Sue's most trusted soldiers.
Yes.
Right. I think that would be a fair assumption. But yeah. Mako and Kai kind of like bury the hatchet. Mako's like, you're not so bad. And then Kai's like, I don't know. I probably was kind of bad. I think that's what he said, right?
Something like that.
But it was a nice little reunion for the two of them. And then we see that Korra is captured and chained.
Yes, she's captured. She still believes that her father died.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, she never saw the conclusion of that Kuvira saved him from falling over the cliffside.
Mm-hmm.
So she blames Zaheer. It's like, you killed my father. And she, mm-hmm. like, dragon breathes at him. And Zaheer mentions also, he's like, I'm also mourning a loss.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that there is more Red Lotus members.
Mm-hmm.
And that he says, bring out the poison.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some metallic poison that they're bending, and it seems like they're going to be using that on Korra.
And that's where the episode ends.
Yes.
10 out of 10. That's all I gotta say. Dude, this episode is so crazy.
Yes, I love this episode so much. And it was funny because we talked about Zaheer and his, you know, separating himself from earthly possessions and attachments, and that's the reason why he was finally able to do unassisted flight. And mm-hmm. as far as we know, that he's only the second person to be able to do this.
Right, the first being Guru Lahima.
Yes, so he studied Guru Lahima's teachings very closely. He mentioned prior that he unlocked the ability of flight. But it was such a long time ago. Even Tenten said, like, I heard the stories, but I didn't think any of it to be true.
Yeah.
I came across an interesting post not too long ago that mentioned why other airbenders wouldn't have been able to
achieve it.
To achieve the same ability. And that's because, I mean, they all have these earthly tethers. And as air nomads, we see that even in the small glimpses that we get of, like, Aang's room and stuff, it's pretty barren. They don't really have too many earthly possessions. I mean, they're air nomads, so we understand that they were traveling for a good amount of their life as well. But the thing, one thing that they kept close to them, and that each one of them got
was
air bisons.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so that connection and that relationship to their air bison was the thing that tethered them, and that possibly kept anyone that could have achieved unassisted flight from getting that ability.
Right. Well, I mean, even to the point where, like, it circumvents the need for it. Right. Like.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
The airbenders aren't people of, I'm sure that they learn how to defend themselves, but they're not people mm-hmm. of fighting, right? So mm-hmm. like this skill that is purely meant for travel is, you know, essentially exactly the same or very similar to being able to fly on an air bison.
Exactly.
And I think that the earthly tether as the air bison, the sky bison, it makes a lot of sense. And I also think that they may not have seen it that way because it was their connection. The Sky Bison helped connect them to the Earth. It is another connection to the Earth, but it is also a connection of the Earth, right? So it's like, it's both to them, right? Like mm-hmm. it depends on how you look at it, but I think that makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. So it was so interesting and like something that I never really thought about. Mm-hmm. And then so that's why I was excited to go to that. Another reason why I was excited for this episode was like, oh, that makes so much more sense, because like it had been, you know, millennia since like we heard of any like other airbender being able to do this. It's like, wait, why hasn't anyone mm-hmm. else? I mean, we understand that these people are extremely spiritual. They follow Buddhist practices in detaching themselves from earthly possessions and things like that. So I'm like, why hasn't, you know, anyone else been able to fulfill this ability? But then that makes sense with the air bison and not even actually needing that ability.
Yeah. No, it's crazy, but dude, like how good was this episode though? I just think that everything that happened in this episode, well, actually the last thing that I want to point out is that we got two really great airbending abilities in this season, right? I guess we got one last season that got kind of refined and changed into something new this season with Jinora's kind of like spiritual projection.
Oh, yeah.
That happened last season, but it's different here. and I think it is its own ability, but she describes it as an airbender technique, right?
Yes.
That this is not something that someone else would be able to do. We get unassisted flight. I think that we have really, you know, raised the gamut of, like, what mm-hmm. airbending techniques can be. And also, like, the different directions, right? Like, I think that it was Jinora's, like, duty and connection to the world that allowed her to do her astral projection, mm-hmm. where it was like Zaheer's detachment from the world that allowed him to get unassisted flight. So depending on which way you go with these with your, you know, airbending can determine mm-hmm. like what kind of powers you can unlock. It's like a skill tree in like an RPG.
Exactly.
But yeah, this episode is just so good, man. Every reveal, everything was so good. Like it was so planned out. The scene in Guru Lahima's chamber, the reveal of Zaheer's new power, the reveal of Bolin's new power, the action, the storytelling through action. I think it's just all there. This to me is what looks like a perfect episode almost. Like this mm-hmm. is as close as I think you get in this entire
definitely.
Series to a perfect
episode. I love the action. I love the pacing of it. I love the reveals. I mean, I feel like I was gasping like two or three times in this episode alone. So it's such a great build up because like mm-hmm. we as we're going through these episodes, like last two episodes, we're like, oh my God, like, you know, it's really ramping up. It's, you know, it's almost the end of the season. And then you get this and it's just like, oh my God. And the very end, you're like, poison, that's their plan the whole time. They're just going to kill her. Like,
just do it earlier. Like what?
Yeah.
No, but like, but there's like a whole other whole thing that goes beyond that. But, I think that, it's just so good. My little mini spoiler for next week, because I know I want to keep talking about it, so I'm going to say it now so that you can remind me about it. Mm-hmm. But next week, the final episode of the season is a masterclass in we can make this the same but different. Because does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
I think that, and I think that was like a major strength of that episode of, I don't want to go too far into it, but the way that people who really like Star Wars always want to see something different, but then mm-hmm. when something different happens, they get mad. I think that this show kind of did the opposite, and like we want to see something new and we want to see something different, but we also want to see something the same, and I think they were able to just do it so beautifully next mm-hmm. episode. These two episodes are just like a perfect bookend to what is my favorite season of Korra. Like I say, I think that season 4 is better episode by episode, but mm-hmm. just as an entire product, season 3 is just so unmatched. So, yeah.
10 out of 10.
Any last words, Tony?
No, I mean, look out for the giveaway. Should be coming this week. Check out Chan's new podcast. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be there eventually.
It's already been recorded. It's just a matter of
it's already recorded, but it will be released eventually. Uh-huh. And it's a whole new venture for Chan. So, I mean, I think that's really interesting. That's something that I know he's been wanting to do for a very long time.
Yeah.
So go support him, please.
Thank you so much. And also, let us know if there's any hiccups with the new hosting site. We don't want to put out something that doesn't work anymore. So, anyways, thank you so much, everybody, for listening. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And we'll catch you all. we've touched your hearts, okay? But we'll catch you all next time. Bye.
Bye.